You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, what a week it has been. I don't know about y'all, but I've had a long week. But just to catch y'all up, I know I wasn't on with you all last week, but it's all because I had a jam-packed week. For those of you who don't know, the beginning of September is really jam-packed for me. I have my grandmother's birthday, my girlfriend's birthday, and my dad's birthday all within the first 9 days of September. So you can only imagine how busy I was. Had some festivities going for last week, and then was celebrating my dad's earlier this week. So had a great time, and putting smiles on all three of their faces, and just excited to be back, excited to be on and talk some good sports with y'all. I hope y'all been doing well in my 1 week of absence. I told y'all I won't do that again, where I give you like this month long hiatus of not posted content. So here I am back again. Hope everybody's week has been going well. But with that being said, man, we got a lot to talk about. So let's go ahead and jump into things. Let's see what's been going on within the world of sports. So is it too early to hit the panic button on Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams? So the reason why I ask is, you guys know I'm a diehard Bears fan through and through, but this has been a question that's been circulating around, the league, around, fans, analysts, whoever, right? Not necessarily Ben Johnson himself, because it was his first game, but Caleb Williams, right? But I packaged them together because they are a package deal, right? Is it too early to hit the panic button? It's absolutely way too early. It's an overreaction to hit the panic button on Ben and Caleb right now. Was it frustrating, to watch the Bears fold and give that game away? Yes. Did it infuriate me to watch us lose in a similar way that we Bears fans are used to? Well, we have been accustomed to. Yes. Did Caleb almost made me throw my remote and break my TV? Or my dad's TV, I should say, because I was watching the game at his house. Again, did Caleb almost make me throw the remote and break the TV? Yes. Am I giving up and throwing in a towel on the season after one game? Absolutely not. Now, we all watched the game. The Vikings, they ended up being a second half team in that game, right? The Bears came out swinging. They had, the ball first, marched down the field. Didn't have the ball first. It went on defense first. Got a stop. Got the ball, marched it down the field. First drive, touchdown, which was really, really great to see, right? And the offense was pretty much, that was all the offense for the night. The offense, they had their moments where they moved the ball. There was a couple of splash plays here and there, but the momentum really shifted in this game after that horrible holding call that was called on Darnell Wright as the Bears were marching down the field in field goal range with an opportunity potentially to go up 24-6 at that point in the game. After that, and it was just it's just egregious. I don't know what the refs were doing in this game. I really and truly don't know, but that holding call was one of the worst holding calls I've ever seen in my life. Referees need to be investigated for that. And I don't care. I can't get fined for criticizing the referee. So that was trash. NFL officiating. And I mentioned you guys' Twitter page to let you know how trash that was. But After that holding call, that was followed by an intentional grounding penalty by Caleb Williams. And the momentum really shifted from there, right? And there, honestly, there was a play even early on in the game. I want to say it was in the second quarter where there was a big fourth down in three, and Caleb completely just missed Cole Kmet over the middle. Again, the Vikings still have one of the best defenses in the NFL, so we knew that this was going to be a challenge. We knew that, you know, Brian Flores, he obviously only brought really like one blitz, one or two blitzes like the first half. I think he was only rushing like three or four the whole first half, but in the second half, he really dialed up the blitzes. He came after Caleb. He got him uncomfortable in the pocket, and we saw what happened, right? I mean, Brian Flores has been known to do that. His defenses are tough. They're strong. They're difficult to run the ball against. And, you know, if you can't establish a run game, that makes the pass game difficult because you become one-dimensional. And I think that's what happened in this game as well. The execution just was not there the way it needed to be, especially when the momentum was all in Chicago's favor, especially after the big pick six by Nashawn Wright on J.J. McCarthy. Now, I just, like I said, like after that first drive, the offense was really just, they were a non-factor. Cairo Santos also had a bad night kicking, missing that field goal. And the game really, really hurt us in the end because we ended up losing by three. We had an opportunity late in the game at the end. Kairos, for whatever reason, failed to be able to kick the ball out of bounds to save some time on the clock because we only had one timeout in a two-minute warning. But because he did not kick the ball out of bounds, they were able to return it and get it under the 2 minutes. So that only left the Bears with one opportunity to stop the clock, which was just, it was bad. You know, it was just bad. So, but again, in regards to Caleb and Ben, we all knew that there were going to be some growing pains. Caleb, now, I'm not going to make any excuses because Caleb definitely needs to, he needs to play way better. I mean, the overthrows have to stop. He needs to be better in the pocket. Don't be so quick to check it down. He has zero excuses, right? The time is now. The time is now. We have a play caller in Ben Johnson that he knows what he's doing. He knows how to coach. He's not somebody who's going to be, passive. He's very vocal. He's very aggressive. He's very intentional with his words. And I really, you know, like the way that Ben Johnson carries himself and how serious he is about getting his football team in a winning mentality. So I do like Ben Johnson as the Bears head coach. So no, I'm not going to give it up on him right now. Did he make some questionable play calls? Yes. He even came out and said, and this is one thing that I love about Ben Johnson, his accountability. He said, look, even with the question with kicking the ball out of bounds, because there's a new rule in the NFL. You kick it within the landing zone or whatever, like it'll, the clock will stop or they can't return to something like that. He said, look, I got greedy and I wanted the extra 5 yards. So that's why I didn't kick it out of bounds. That's why he didn't kick it in the landing zone. He also said, look, he needs to call more run plays, right? The Bears had a hard time establishing a run game. I mean, there were a few, you know, runs here or there that were really good. But overall, as the game continued to go on, that running game went away and then they became, desperate. You get in desperation mode and you want it bad and you just you become one dimensional. And again, Caleb, the overthrows, they were pretty bad. I'm not going to lie. I'm not giving up on him though, because those are throws that Caleb is, you know, very capable of making, right? He can make these throws. He's just overthinking it and He just has to, the game is just has to slow down for him. But I think that as the season goes, he will improve. Everybody take a deep breath. I had to as well. Because I if you know me, I am a diehard, like I said, Bears fan. And I know how I get. So now that I've had some time to decompress and process everything, everybody take a deep breath and calm down. Bears fans, we should be 1-0 right now. I know it's painful for me too, but it's on to the Lions, a team that has that looked very questionable without Ben Johnson there and without Aaron Glenn. So we have an opportunity to get back on track, get a divisional win, which is important, and let's get this thing rolling in the right direction. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not giving up on my Bears. Next up, man, let's talk about Alabama. So I know a lot of y'all, you know, I know a lot of people may think that the reason why I didn't post the episode last week, the last week was because Bama lost. So I wanted to skip a week and not talk about it. No. And just to prove you guys wrong, I'm going to talk about it right now. I'm going to talk about Alabama losing to Florida State. All of those calls and the text messages and all this that I receive every time Bama loses, it's cool. And look, to protect my peace, I didn't even respond to all of y'all. Y'all know who y'all are. Some of y'all I responded to maybe a day or two later. But y'all know it's all love. It's all good. But let's talk about it, right? Let's talk about it. So Alabama obviously went into Florida State, 14-point favorite. Ended up losing the game by 14, 31-17. So the biggest question here, after that loss, you know, Alabama dropped down from number 8 to number 21. After that, you know, second week, you know, was able to go back home to Bryant-Denny, posted a 73-0 shutout victory. Now, after the loss to Florida State, the entire fan base erupted, myself included. But I really and truly feel that because that week one game, it was horrible, right? The effort was lackluster. The execution was terrible. The energy was non-existent. Right. Bama made me so mad that I didn't even talk to my own mom after the game. I couldn't even talk to my own mom because I was just that upset. Like I was that mad. And I think that I was not the only Bama fan that felt like that. And it's not because Alabama lost the game. It's the way that they lost the game. We've never seen an Alabama team just come out week one, give up 31 points to a team, especially a team that went 2-10 last year, right? So that was just sad to see. I know that there were some significant injuries that Bama had, but again, I'm not making excuses. I'm not here to make excuses. We can't make excuses if we won't at Alabama. It's next man up, right? It's a next man up mentality. That's why we recruit. That's why you practice. Is so that if something like that does happen, we have somebody that can step in and handle their own, right? And I think that the momentum in that game shifted so quickly, and that's something that we just have not seen. We have not seen, I think that's the first week one loss Alabama's had since, what was it, like 2001 or 2000, something like that. So it's been like 24 or 25 years since they've even had a week one loss. Like that was just, it was very, very, very painful, very frustrating to watch that. And again, the entire, you know, I want to say the entire, but a good bit of the fan base, a good bit of people were calling for Kalen DeBoer's job. And, you know, it's a lot of stuff that came out of that weekend. And again, we were collectively upset. Did I say some things that I may not have meant? I meant majority of the things I said. I'm not going to lie to you. I meant majority of the things I said. But there are some things that, you know, we say out of anger and, you know, being that we are, people say, oh, Bama fans are spoiled. Yes, we are spoiled. Because we have a standard that we expect and that we live by. Right. And that's and effort is the one thing that you should never question about an Alabama football team. And I think that that's the thing that really triggered me and had me upset the most is because the effort. If you're giving your effort and somebody just beats you and they were just better than you, okay. But when you are clearly more talented than the other team and they just out hustle you on up and down the football field, they outman you, they're more physical than you, that's just not something that we're used to seeing. And I'm not ashamed to admit, yes, I'm spoiled to the fact that I am not seeing, you know, a team at Alabama's effort get questioned. So I say all that to say this, and this is the question. Did the loss to Florida State help Alabama? And you all may think that that's a crazy question to ask. However, despite all everything that I just said to you, despite how upset and pissed I was, despite how upset and mad that the entire fan base is, and you know, other people, whoever you may be, right? Yes, I think that the week one loss was exactly what Alabama needed to wake up. Right. Sometimes you need those hard lessons. Right. And unfortunately, ours came in week one, which is, again, still stings to think about. And yes, it came in week one, especially in a season where you cannot afford to have three losses. You really only can two losses at max, unless you're a three loss team who wins your conference, meaning another team would have to be at three losses as well, and you might have had to have a head-to-head victory to get in the SEC championship over them. So again, you don't have that long of a leash to get into the playoffs, right? So again, I think it might have been a blessing in disguise, right? Everything happens for a reason. Of course, we all know they called a players only meeting like they normally always do. After stuff like this happens, Coach DeBoer said, obviously, after the game, everybody was pissed off. But I don't even know if the players were as pissed off as the fans were. I don't know. I don't know. That may be crazy for me to say, but I don't know. I was on Twitter. I know I wasn't in the locker room, but boy, oh boy, if they could have saw what Twitter looked like on that Saturday, boy. Probably what Tuscaloosa looked like on that Saturday. But again, I understand it was Louisiana Monroe, but the way Bama came out in the second game, and putting together that 73-0 shutout, it was really good to see, right? It was refreshing to see the guys out there flying around, having fun. Again, you're supposed to do this to an inferior opponent. But again, just because you're better than an opponent doesn't mean you're going to go out there and execute. And sometimes you can look sloppy. Even winning a game, you can still look sloppy. There were some things that, you know, Bama could have done better. Obviously, the coaching staff, Ryan Grubb, Coach DeBoer, you know, Kane Womack, those guys did say that there were some execution, you know, some plays that they left out there where they should have executed better defensively. And Kane Womack, our defensive coordinator, spoke on defensive, miscues that happened. So, but with SEC play opening up in a few weeks, you know, against UGA on the 27th, you know, Bama needed to get on track, right? I love to see all of the quarterbacks. Ty, you know, did his thing. Austin Mack came in and did his thing, and Keelon Russell came in and did his thing. The running backs did their thing. All three quarterbacks threw at least two touchdowns each. There were 10 total touchdowns in the game. You know, in Nick Saban's era, they've never scored more than 66 points in the game, and that's primarily because, not because they couldn't, let's be for real, because, you know, Saban's teams could have put up 80 if they really wanted to. But that's because, you know, Saban would kind of, you know, he would pull it back and take the foot off the gas, and you know, run the ball and kind of just kill the clock. But after that 73-0 win, Kalen DeBoer did say that, look, we better be keeping the pain of what happened week one internally. Channel whatever level of frustration, being upset, we need to channel that into our preparation. So from now on, from that game going forward, this Alabama team, if they continue to do that and channel that frustration, channel that anger, remember what happened in week one, this team will not get complacent. This team could play with anybody in the country. They can beat anybody in the country if they play with that type of effort that they play with against Louisiana Monroe. They can, again, I'm not, obviously it's UL Monroe, but what I'm saying is from the mentality of having the energy, the effort, the going out there and really giving it your all and leaving it on the field, they can play with anybody in the country. And people know that. And it's going to be very helpful to have Jam Miller back, which he should be back for the game actually tomorrow, which I don't, he'll be available if I'm not mistaken. But I don't think that they'll really play Jam. I think they'll probably let him just dress out. They may get him in there maybe a few plays here and there, but I really wouldn't play him a whole lot. Just because in a couple of weeks, you know, you want him to be at full strength for UGA. Tim Keenan, don't know when he'll be back. And so I would safely assume that he'll be back for Georgia. But I do know that a couple other players who were banged up will be good to go as well. Ryan Williams will be playing. He's coming back after that, the concussion that he suffered in week one. So, again, man, the sky's the limit for this team, and I still believe in them. And you know, I think, you know, things are going to shape up, you know, just fine going forward, as long as the guys continue to remember what happened in week one and use that as fuel to push forward through the rest of this season. So, but yeah, before we go to our next topic, man, you are listening to the Lace Up Podcast right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audio Boom. Please like, comment, subscribe, share this episode, share the podcast page with your friend. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Man, I appreciate all the love and support, everybody tuning in and rocking with me as we have a conversation around what's going on in the world of sports. So kicking back into things, I know I'm heavy football this week because I had to catch up on some things, but let's talk about the team I hate, right? Let's talk about the team that I really can't stand, and that's the Green Bay Packers, right? So the Green Bay Packers knocked off the Washington Commanders last night, Thursday Night Football. They won that game 27-18. Really lopsided game. Pretty much dominated the entire game, really and truly. But we're not going to get into the stats of that game or anything like that. But there was something that I saw that I've been seeing circulating right now. So the Packers are 2-0. And they're saying that the Packers are the best team in the NFL. The Packers are going to the Super Bowl, and a lot of other things, right? And so, you know, you have all these posts going on out here. They say, one guy on Get Up ESPN, he says, like, I don't know if a team could have had a better 5-day stretch in an entire NFL season than what the Packers did from. For the first 2 weeks and beating the Lions and then beating the Commanders. You had somebody else say the Packers improved to 2-0 for the third time under Matt LaFleur after beating the Commanders 27-18. He said when they started 2-0 in 2019 and 2020, the Packers reached the NFC Championship game. Both of their victories obviously came over the Lions, who won 12-plus games last year, and the Commanders, who won 12 games. So the Lions won 15 games last year. Commanders won 12. And He also mentioned that the Packers are the 15th team in Super Bowl era since 1966 to win their first two games of a season, both against teams that won 12-plus games in the previous season. So the question is, are the Packers the best team in the NFL? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this at all, y'all. Let me get right into it. No. No, the Packers are not the best team in the NFL. No, the Packers are not going to the Super Bowl just because they're 2-0. It's the first 2 weeks of the season. Like, what are we even talking about right now? They beat a team in the Detroit Lions that lost their offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, now head coach of the Chicago Bears, and their defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, now head coach of the New York Jets. And another team in the Washington Commanders that played a weak schedule last year. If you don't believe me, go look it up. Go see who the starting quarterbacks were, the teams that they were playing against. They played a weak schedule last year. And then got smacked in the NFC Championship game. Y'all do this every single year. It's only two games. Relax. I mean, can we get more than 2 weeks into the season before y'all crown the Green Bay Packers Super Bowl champions? Like, this is ridiculous. Like, what have they proven for y'all to just, what have they shown us that you feel that they are just that much better than everybody else? Like, that, this has happened the last 3 years. Literally, people hop on the old Packers winning the Super Bowl bandwagon, and then they get cracked by the 49ers or the Eagles in the playoffs because Love is back there throwing popcorn chicken go balls to his wide receivers. Like, throwing off his back foot. That stuff doesn't work in the playoffs. What are we talking about? No, the Packers are not the best team in the NFL. They're not better than the Bills. They're not better than the Ravens. They're not better than the Eagles. Stop. Stop. And I can't wait for all of this to backfire. So everybody who's making these idiotic statements and these wild takes, like, I cannot wait until it backfires. Yes, the Packers are a really good team. Micah Parsons takes them to a next level. But again, this team has historically had injury concerns. They just lost Jaden Reed to a broken collarbone last night. He'll be out, I think that's like 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, they it's 2 weeks, y'all. It's literally 2 weeks. They have 15 games left. Can we please pump the brakes? Like, good Lord. Stop this nonsense. Okay. All right. I told y'all I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on that, but I had to get that out because Anyway, let's talk about the WNBA, man. Not going to spend the whole time talking about football. Let's shift gears, man. Let's talk WNBA because we have the 2025 WNBA playoffs. They're starting this Sunday. All eight teams are going to be in action. You got the number one seed Minnesota Lynx. They're going to take it on the expansion franchise, the Golden State Valkyries. Then you got the Las Vegas Aces hosting the Seattle Storm, the Dream taking on the Indiana Fever. And then defending champion New York Liberty, they're going to be playing the Phoenix Mercury. So the best of three first round is the 1-1-1 format. So whoever's playing home, then they'll go away and then they'll come back home. So one team will potentially get two home games, but it's the best of three. And then the higher seed is hosting game one, like I said. And if necessary, there would be a game three. The semifinals are the best of five. So that model is going to be 2-2-1. And then the higher seed hosting games one, two, and five. And for the first time ever, the WNBA finals will expand to a best of seven series in which the higher seed will host games one, two, five, and seven. So you can track the playoff race with the on the WNBA, obviously, page, and they'll update the matchups and stuff like that. But really excited to watch this. I know a lot has been going on in the WNBA season, and you know there were some things that happened that we talked about on the podcast with people acting crazy at the games and throwing objects that I will not mention. But that it's just that was just a crazy time. But again, we are now here to playoff time, which is always an exciting time for any sport, playoff time. So, and I'm really looking at this, man. I'm really liking, you know, I'm really, really and truly liking the Las Vegas Aces, man. I know, you know, Aja Wilson, man, you know, doing her thing, having a great year, a historic year. She broke, you know, breaking the records that she's broken, and which we mentioned that on one of the previous shows. But I really like the Las Vegas Aces, man. Definitely, you know, rooting for them. And obviously, like the hometown team, Atlanta Dream. You know, they got the 3 seed, so that's exciting. We'll see what they're able to do. Shout out to them. You know, my hometown team, the Chicago Sky, we got some work to do. But, you know, the home team where I live, you know, obviously where I grew up in Atlanta, the Dream are in it. So, hey, definitely rooting for them. But, again, I like the Aces. I'm rooting for the Dream, but I do like the Aces to come out and – when it's the whole thing. But obviously, like, if things don't happen after the first round series, I will, you know, adjust my picks as necessary if teams do get eliminated. But I do like the Las Vegas Aces. And again, the matchups for the first round by series are you have the number 1 seed Minnesota Lynx, number 8 seed Golden State Valkyries. Again, game 1 is going to be in Minnesota on Sunday at 1 p.m., then you have the 2 seed Las Vegas Aces versus number 7 seed Seattle Storm. That game is going to be at 10 p.m. Whew, pray for whoever is staying up to watch that game on 10 p.m. on a Sunday night. and then the Atlanta Dream have the 3 seed. They're going to be playing number 6 Indiana Fever. That game 1 is actually also going to be at 10 p.m. Good Lord. Whew, why are they doing this to us? And then the number 4 seed Phoenix Mercury versus number 5 seed New York Liberty. That game is going to be at 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. I mean, good Lord, y'all couldn't sprinkle. They have a 1 p.m. game, a 5 p.m., and then the other two are at 10. They could have did a 1, a 4, like a 7 and a 10, something like that. I mean, golly. Whew. But look, we're going to get through it. We're going to get through it. We are going to get through it. So it's all good. It's all good. All right, man. Let's shift gears. Well, before that, again, you are listening to the Lace Up Podcast right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audio Boom. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, tell a friend, and tell a friend. Appreciate everybody, again, jumping in and joining the conversation as we cover what's been going on in the world of sports. So let's talk about a thriller because I didn't get a chance to chat about this with you guys. They had the Bills and the Ravens, man. A thriller last week. So question is, look, what do we learn about each team? So just a quick recap of this game. The Buffalo Bills ended up pulling out this victory, a comeback win, 41-40. Again, what a thriller. Let's just look at both of the team's stats in this game. So you had the Bills had 19 first downs in this to the Ravens. I mean, the Bills had 29 first downs to the Ravens, 19. 78 total plays for the Bills to 50 total plays for the Ravens. Total yards, 497 for the Bills, 432 for the Ravens. The Bills outpassed the Ravens. They had 389 passing yards to the Ravens, 194. But the Ravens outrushed the Buffalo Bills, 238 yards to 108. In the red zone, which I do think was a difference in this game as well. The Ravens were 1-3 in the red zone. The Bills were 5-7 in the red zone. So capitalized in the red zone. And we're able to take advantage of those opportunities. And another thing, the Ravens turned the ball over to Derrick Henry, fumble late in the game. That was very costly. And then the Bills dominated the time of possession, 34 minutes to 25 minutes, right? So what did we learn? What did we learn? So for me, the AFC Championship game is going to run through either Buffalo or Baltimore. I mean, I'm not going to say which one. I know the Bills won, but it's either going to be Buffalo or Baltimore. These are two of the best teams. I didn't say the two best. I'm saying these are two of the best teams in NFL. I think, you know, top three. You got to put the Ravens and the Bills within the top three. You obviously got the Eagles up there. So Eagles, Ravens, Bills, though, are in no particular order. Those are the three best teams, you know, to me in the NFL. And we really didn't learn too much more of what we already knew, right? The Ravens, you know, this Ravens loss, you know, this is the way that they lose a lot of their games. The games that they lose, this is the way that they lose in similar fashion, right? It's always the same way. This Bills team, but again, this Ravens team is very, they're a strong team, right? I mean, we know this about the Ravens. We didn't have to learn that about the Ravens. We know the Ravens are a solid team. They have top to bottom one of the best rosters in the NFL on offense and defense, right? This Bills team, they're relentless, right? Same thing. One of the best rosters, top to bottom in the NFL. Both teams are extremely talented. And one of these teams, they're going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. I think that between these two teams, I know people are still, you know, the Chiefs and all. I am saying this, and I've been saying this. I really would love to see Lamar play in the Super Bowl. I really would. I think that's the one thing that he just does not have on his resume. He has everything else, but he just has not gotten over that hump. Neither has Josh Allen. But I would much rather, and I really want to see Lamar Jackson playing in the Super Bowl. So the road to the Super Bowl is going to come through one of these teams. And I think one of these teams will be representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. And honestly, we really got an AFC championship preview, to be honest with you. I think that this was an AFC championship preview. It really was. Now, whether it's going to be in Buffalo or in Baltimore, that is yet to be seen. We don't know. But I think that this was the AFC championship game preview that we got. And what a great game it was. So, but yeah, with that, man, let's shift gears. Let's talk boxing, man, because we have a big boxing showdown that's coming up on tomorrow night between Canelo and Crawford, right? So let's talk about Canelo Alvarez and let's talk about Terrence Crawford. So looking at this matchup, and this is actually going to be streaming live on Netflix. So we don't actually have to purchase this one on pay-per-view because it'll be on Netflix, which is exciting because paying for those pay-per-view is... That does add up. But again, so Canelo Alvarez, Terrence Crawford. So Canelo's 35. Terrence is 37. Canelo is 5'7.5", and then Terrence Crawford is 5'8". Canelo's reach is 70.5, and then Terrence Crawford's is 74. Canelo's Alvarez's stance is orthodox to Terrence Crawford's southpaw. And then the record for each of these, Canelo Alvarez is 63-2-2 with 39 knockouts. And Terrence Crawford is 41-0 with 31 knockouts. So let's look at Canelo. So Canelo Alvarez is a four-division world champion, a two-time and reigning undisputed super middleweight champion. And he's really, you know, icon, Mexico's, you know, one of their best boxers since, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., honestly. Like, he's been in the ring with a lot of legends. He's built a resume that's really, you could consider a first ballot Hall of Fame once he retires, right? He is a 67 fight veteran. He turned professional in Mexico at the age of 14. At 23, he fought an all-time great in Floyd Mayweather, which we know, if you saw that, I was able to see that fight. I don't know if you guys saw it, but he then held three belts in three weight classes simultaneously. He was in the ring with some of the sport's biggest punchers. Like I said, he had Gennady Golovkin, and then 175-pound champion Sergey Kovalev. Some of these names are hard to pronounce, y'all. But neither one of them could beat him, right? So Canelo was able to come out victorious, with the exception of Floyd Mayweather. Now I'm talking about the other guys that Canelo beat, but he didn't beat Floyd. Let's talk about Canelo's punching power. So that's traveled with him, you know, from the lower weight class, he up until where he's at now. So he did start at 154 pounds and now he's at 175 pounds. He did, knock out Kovalev and also Caleb Plant. So that punching power that he has, obviously, there's no question behind that. Now, he does not have a knockout in his past six fights. He has knocked down four of his past five opponents. So those being John Ryder, Jermell Charlo, Jamie Mugina, and Edgar Belanga. Right. So let's look at Terrence Crawford on the other hand. So Crawford is a two division undisputed champion, a four division world champion. So he is undefeated. He's a switch hitting boxer. He has some crazy capabilities in the ring. Now in 2008, Crawford was sitting in the car after shooting dice in his neighborhood. A bullet went through the back window and it hit him. It hit him in the head, so he was bleeding from his head. He actually got the strength. And this is nothing but God. Y'all know me. I'm a man of faith. The strength to drive himself to the hospital. That is nothing but God. You can't tell me that's not God. That's just a part of his story. And, his mom, he says that his mom used to pay kids and other people in the neighborhood to try to beat him up, to toughen him. That is insane. He actually went from fighting in the streets to becoming one of the best boxers of his generation. Again, 41 wins, no losses, 31 by knockout. Again, his IQ in the ring is unmatched. No one has solved it, the challenge of facing him in the ring. His skill set is top tier, right? He has a killer instinct. And it's very difficult to get in the ring with him. Now, punching power wise, right? So Crawford was on a streak of 11 consecutive stoppages before moving to 154 pounds. So now that he's stepping into his fourth weight class, it's unknown if that power will translate at 168 pounds. But I'm not doubting it. Now let's talk about the hitting style, right? So let's go back to Canelo, because now we're going to talk about the style of boxing that both of these guys do. So Canelo, he's adapted like the boxing style around effective punching, right? So his heavy punches in the scoring zone, they can have that extreme effect on scorecards. He's outlanded most of his competition in the power punching department. Except for his only two losses to Mayweather and Dmitry Bivol. So he has like various like kill shots, left hook, to the liver and the head. And then he also has his looping or straight right cross. And then he also has this counter uppercut that he uses, right? Especially against Billy Joe Sanders. When he knocked him out in 2021. Now let's talk about Bud Crawford. So Terrence Bud Crawford, right? He has this ambidextrous style of fighting, right? And switch hitting, right? He can fight from Orthodox or Southpaw stance, which is dangerous, right? Because he's unpredictable. So it gives him that unpredictability in the ring, allows him to adjust his approach at any point in the fight. Now, if that's not dangerous, I don't know what is. Imagine being in the ring with somebody and they can switch sides and fight with their right or their left, right? Like, that's hard to adjust to. And his IQ in the ring is unmatched as well, right? He reads the patterns. He can remember the sequences, punches and movements. He really could just break his opponent down and take him apart, which we've seen him do. He does have a defensive system based on, like, the timing and the reflexes. He uses the pulls, slips, rolls, the weaves, the blocks, the glove catches, shoulder rolls, even a high guard as well. And then he also has a very unique skill set at his counter punching, right? So to opponents that overreach or overcommit. And we saw this against Errol Spence Jr. and Sean Porter. So his back foot counter punching is really deadly, right? The biggest question, so with that being said, who wins this fight? Looking at, you know, both of these fighters, obviously have a lot of respect for both of these guys, and I think that they're both extremely talented. They've been in the game. Their records speak for themselves. Obviously, Canelo has been in it longer than Bud Crawford. But with Terrence Crawford's unorthodox style of boxing and his ability to adjust throughout the match on the fly at any point, his IQ in the ring, I have a hard time picking against Bud Crawford. So Bud Crawford, I'm going with him. I'm going to say it'll be, I don't know if anybody's going to get knocked out, but I'm going to say it's going to be Bud. I'll say Bud in seven or eight rounds. I'm gonna go eight. So I'll say Bud in eight because I know Canelo's is a tough. He's tough as well. So this one is gonna be a really good one. So I'm excited to see it. But I'm going Terrence Bud Crawford to get the victory in this one. And last but not least, man, let's quickly talk about college football. So a lot of people have been, you know, each week we're getting into that point of the year where now we're talking about, you know, I know it's still early, but the matchups have been arranged so well that now we're even talking about who's on upset alert this week, right? So that's the biggest question, right? What college football teams are on upset alert? So for me, I'm looking at number 6 UGA going on the road to number 15 Tennessee. I'm looking at number 12 Clemson at Georgia Tech, and I'm looking at number 18 South Florida at number 5 Miami. So I'm picking in these games. Well, I'm really going to pick. I'm going to pick one of them, but I have the other teams on upset alert. So I am picking Tennessee to knock off Georgia tomorrow. Now, Georgia is a 3.5-point favorite in this game, and the over-under is 50.5. But I do think that, you know, going into Knoxville, that's one of the toughest places to play. In college football, Gunnar Stockton has not looked all that great. I know that Georgia's running game is probably their biggest strength on the team right now. And I think that, and I expect them to rely heavily on the run game to try to help Gunnar Stockton out. But I just think that that Tennessee team, you know, having those guys come in there and in their house and Gunner being like that first year starting quarterback for Georgia, this is his biggest test early on in the season. And I do think that Tennessee is actually going to come out with the victory in this game. And then, you know, number 12 Clemson, you know, going to Georgia Tech. I'm looking at this one as a potential upset alert because, look, Georgia Tech has gotten better, man. We can't look past them anymore. You know, the ACC obviously has a couple of teams that, you know, a few teams in, you know, Clemson, Miami, Florida State, that are, you know, teams that have been in the conversation, right? Have been, you know, talked about making the playoffs, at least up, you know, at this point in time. So I don't know, and I'm I'm just saying Clemson. Don't count Georgia Tech out. And then Miami, I know y'all got South Florida at home, and I know South Florida only beat Boise State, but that Florida win was impressive. Going into Gainesville and knocking Florida off was impressive, and this team is just hot right now. People thought it was funny when Alabama was playing them and struggling, you know, a couple years ago, but we actually had played them the last 2 years. This is the only year we didn't play them. So we played them last year and the year before last. People thought it was funny, but this team is a tough team now. So Miami better watch out. But again, those are my three upset alert picks and games to watch. But, you know, of course, I'm taking my boys, Alabama, to, you know, win over Wisconsin and get some rest and rest up for Georgia on the 27th. So, and then you have another good game. Again, these are just games I'm just talking about now that I'm circling to watch as well. So then you also got the, you know, Florida Gators after that loss that they had coming into LSU, number three LSU. So we'll see how that game shapes up. LSU obviously is the favorite in this one. Death Valley, another difficult place, one of the difficult places to play in college football. So we'll have to see how this one shakes up. But, you know, Florida, they have a talented team. DJ Lagway, very talented. So we'll see if they can bounce back and maybe sneak a victory and come out of here with a W. So, but with that, man, that's all I have for y'all. I really appreciate everybody, again, tuning in, rocking with me, having a conversation with me around what's been going on in the world of sports. I'm excited to see what happens this weekend. Sit back, relax, and enjoy some more football. I hope everybody has a blessed, safe, and relaxing weekend. Whatever you do, again, be safe, be blessed. Until next time, y'all, I'm out. Peace.